Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is brought to you by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. Hello again, everybody. I'm Paul Zawaska. With me today, as usual, Teresa Beyer on the other end of the microphone. Teresa, good morning.
Hello,
good afternoon,
sir.
Evening, whatever the heck you're listening to us.
That's right. Morning for us, whenever for you.
Yes. So our subject of the day today is going to be talking about cutouts. Ooh. Or the skinned area, the shape of the skinned area of a ball field.
Fun.
We have, I put out a dimension guide for Beacon that gives people all the different dimensions. Mm-hmm. That they need for cutouts and the shape of the infields and home plate areas and baselines and all that good stuff. And
Exceptionally useful
and helpful. But the one thing I have to always make sure to remind people is that, you know, these numbers are not an absolute. They can be something different. And what your situation is can dictate how you arrange these things. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you read in the rule book, it's going to tell you that you don't have to follow these things exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm always, you know, making sure that I tell people when these questions come up to me on the phone to make sure that they understand that you can have whatever you want. You can have an all-grass infield if you want to. I wouldn't recommend it unless you got Bermuda grass. And I have seen fields like that. Real grass that are all in natural infields. Even in the minor leagues, I've seen that.
Mm. I haven't seen that for a long time. I need to get back out there.
But, I haven't seen it in a long time either. It's been almost 20 years since I last saw that. But
it's coming back, though. I've heard about it.
It can happen. Well, certainly it's creeping back into portions of the infield. I haven't seen it fully yet in real grass. But
mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
In your experience doing the little league, how do you've got a bigger crew, so you do your cutouts so that you can handle them with your hand tools. Have you run into a lot of folks that have made their cutouts specifically so that they can use their larger motorized tools?
Oh, absolutely, especially at the park and rec level, because they don't have the time to get off there and do the detail. So they'll make their baselines down first and third base extra wide.
Exactly the right width.
Well, not exactly, but, you know, and the problem with that is, okay, that's great, but then guys go flying down there with their riding equipment. They don't pay specific attention to the lips.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a little bit off, if you get it exactly the size, it doesn't take much of a shimmy in the steering wheel to have you running off onto the edge and dropping some dirt into those lips. So,
yeah,
not exactly something I'm all for, but I can understand the reason behind it. If you're going to do it, make it a little bit wider than the machine because, you know, somebody's going to get crazy out there.
I just had a random memory of being a little baby groundskeeper and getting yelled at by Mike Buchholder because I got my drag up on the grass. And boy, you guys want to know a fast way to piss off Mike Buchholder? Get that drag in the grass.
Well, Mike Buchholder or any other groundskeeper for the most part. I hear that from my little league crew right now, talking about the newbies that are on the crew.
Ah.
And I keep reminding them where they came from. Because, you know, one time they were the same way. It's just training and constantly watching them and mentoring them.
Yeah.
It's not that they'll never learn it.
It just takes time.
Well, let's bring in our guest today, Larry DeVito, and let's talk about what it is about the cutouts and sizes. Of course, I've got a couple stories, and let's bring Larry in. All right, it's time for our Out of the Park segment, and we have bought back by popular demand the husband of Teresa, our co-host, Larry DeVito, who happens to have some fame because he's actually the head groundskeeper of the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I was going to say, more importantly, Larry, the head groundskeeper of the Twins.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Larry, today we're talking about cutouts, and I'm not talking about Christmas cookies. We're talking about, the infield, the shape of the infield skin around a ballpark. And, you know, it's funny because I get a lot of phone calls from customers at Beacon who talk to me about what should the cutout be for this You know, I don't have the regulation book. And what a lot of people don't know is if they read the rules state that the grass lines are at the discretion of the groundskeeper. In other words, all those suggested dimensions of a ball field for the cutouts of the infield, the back arc, the baselines, the first, third, second base cuts, those are really all at the discretion of the groundskeeper. The only absolute cutout is the pitching mound.
Correct.
The diameter of the pitching mound. But other than that, you can put anything at whatever you want. And with that, let's talk to you because apparently you have gone into some deep meditative thought about this. And, you know, somehow, you know, this apparently what goes on in your office during ball games. You have thought this through thoroughly about cutouts on the infields. So,
well, I think there's a lot of play there. I mean, it plays into into the players. It plays into how it's managed, all of that. And so, yeah, I think that's really interesting.
I've got a good story for that a little bit later on, but I'll hold on to it. And let's talk to Larry about his thoughts. And so, Larry, lay it on us, man.
Well, okay. I will say that in the minor leagues, when we were checked, our annual check of the mounds and the bases and the lights, they did check the back arc, the 95-foot dimension.
Really?
Yeah. They do not do that in the major leagues, but they always check the 95, and it was part of the report, you know, and that we never got fined on it or anything, but...
why would you? That's just
anyway.
Crazy.
So, but you're correct, Paul, in that the only critical aspect of that we still in the major leagues get measured on, they do measure the mound circle diameter. And you'll see at different major and minor league parks, different size home plates that have to do with shade, sunlight issues, traffic, how many college and high school games you have, whatever. Other than the 18-foot mound dimension for the circle, everything else is fair game, I say. You know, so a couple of things. You know, at Dodger Stadium, we had the standard traditional cutouts, and we did at the old place at RFK. But when we opened Nationals Park, you know, the architect and I said, well, let's do something a little different. But then the owners got involved and they started emailing pictures of different stadiums and said, well, here's Boston and here's Pittsburgh and here's New York and on and on and on. And the architect, the field architect and I are like, all right, what are we going to do? So we kind of verbally agreed on kind of we'll get close to this one. Right. So, I took a half moon edger after the sod was in and I just made a couple of marks with flags and I cut it out and I looked at it and said, that looks pretty good. So now when I do that, you have to understand that a certain method that I use when I do that is that you remember in Caddyshack when Chevy Chase is putting and mm-hmm. he does the no, that part. Yeah, that's how.
Is that what you do when you're laying out your grass lines?
Yes, and when I'm using the half moon edger, so it kind of gets me in a rhythm.
You have your zen at that point.
Exactly. So I did first base, and then I said that looks pretty good, and we took the measurements, and we went over and did third base to match it, and then emailed the owners and said, please take a look and tell us what you think, you know, and I didn't cut so much out that I couldn't make an adjustment. And they said, that looks great. And that was it. So that was, that's how that one went.
That was your first mistake was including the owners on that decision.
Well, after all that input, they're just like, oh no, that's fine.
Yeah, they don't really care.
Well, no, they did care. I didn't include them. They included themselves.
That's a very good point.
We call that micromanagement.
Exactly. So so when I got here to Minnesota and I was dealing with Brian Smith, the same architect from Populous that I worked with in Washington, and our second base cutout is pretty standard arc. But at first and third, I said, look, I really want to try this, you know. And it's you got kind of a straight line before it does a little curve. And we'll we'll link some, we'll put some pictures on, I'm sure, on your website so you can take a look. But what I like about it, what I really like about it from the first baseman perspective is that when he's holding a runner and he shuffles off, he's got a straight edge in front of him, you know, rather than an arc. So that he can, I think visually it is a little more comfortable in terms of whether it's going to be grass or dirt. Right. And from the third baseman's perspective, you know, when he's playing in on a bunt, he's generally in right around. He's got a straight edge when he's in. In terms of the size of the cutouts, I think at the professional level, they should either be really small or really big. So now what you had in Baltimore, I like because the player in that it's small in that he knows he's getting the play off the turf. Mm-hmm. Mine are a little big. So I think what the problem can be is when they're in between is, you know, that uncomfortableness of grass versus dirt for the first baseman. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of where I'm going with it is, you know, either make them really, really big, especially if you have a lot of high school and college games on your field, or make them really small. So
let me throw one of my two stories out. We had back in the late 80s, we had a third baseman by the name of Craig Worthington playing for the Orioles. And this would have been in, I think it was 1989. And he played with us for several years, but this story occurs in 1989. We had acquired Brady Anderson, our center fielder, who was a speedster. And the problem with Worthington was he almost constantly played on the corner of the cutout. You know, that arc would come up, and he'd play on that corner. And we found ourselves sodding that thing about four or five times a season. Mm. So I was starting to get really teed off at this. And so I said, screw it, okay. You're going to do this? I'm going to cut it bigger. So we started making, instead of just the round cutout, we started making a straight line across and then coming out and making the arc at that point to get past where he was standing. Well, wherever I moved that damn corner to, he kept adjusting his position. So he was moving farther and farther away from the foul line. And I figured, you know, at some point he's going to say to himself, I can't stand on that corner anymore because I'm too far away. And, of course, whatever you do at third, you have to do it first because you have to make it look, you have to make it look similar. So Anderson, who was a base-stealing threat for us, would use that corner of the cutout as his judgment of where he could go be safe to get back to the base to lead off. Well, as my cutouts got bigger, suddenly he's starting to get picked off and he can't figure out why. And eventually it comes to him that, hey, these cutouts are getting a lot bigger. And finally he comes to complain to me. And I said, hey, don't talk to me about it, the size of the cutouts. I said, talk to your buddy over there at third base, Mr. Worthington, and tell him to stay off the damn corner of the grass. So I have to keep cutting these cutouts bigger and bigger and you get caught off at first base. But in order to get Worthington to stop being on that grass, we had that cutout going almost a quarter of the way.
Oh my!
And I mean, it was huge, but he was adamant about saying, yeah, but I had that problem, you know, with Ripken was the same way. Ripken was the one who taught all of current infielders to stand on the back edge of the grass of the arc. Yeah. To get the biggest area of coverage that you can. As long as you got a strong arm, you can go back that far.
Right.
So he started teaching all these guys, and as we'd get new second basemen coming in, he would say, "Hey, stand over on the grass at second base, and you'll have a lot more range." And of course, that drove me crazy because what happens? You get wear back there, and you'd have to sod or whatever you do. Yes. So. You know, you have to make these adjustments with the players.
And the last couple of years, I've noticed that the shortstop thing is still, as you said, they kind of beat it up in batting practice as much as they do. yeah. anytime. But
well, in that case, they're standing. That was the other thing they would do is during batting practice, they would always stand back fully on the grass because they didn't want to mess up their dirt positions. Little did they realize they're beating the hell out of the grass, which is harder to fix than the dirt.
Exactly. With all the shifting going on now, the second baseman spot is not as bad as it used to be. Those guys are all over the place now, and it's good because it's spreading out the wear. So even the shortstops move around a little more. Compared to 5 years ago, both those spots are a little easier to take care of.
You know, the other thing that you see a lot of when we talk about the cutouts or just the grass lines of an infield that has changed since I've left the industry is you see just about every major league ballpark now has pretty narrow first and third baselines. You know, most of them are down to 4 feet or in some cases less. Whereas back in my day, it was rare to have a 4 foot wide baseline. So it's kind of interesting to see how those have been shrinking as well. Now, as I've always said, it's always easier to take care of grass than it is to take care of dirt. So you want to have more grass out there. And we always kept our grass lines along the foul line and along the infield edge of the infield as close to the baseline as possible. Because, you know, the players aren't going to run in the straight line that the bases are. They're arcing out on all four, you know, around all four bases. So we kept our grass lines on the interior of the infield very close to the running line. In fact, that was another complaint Brady had for me one time, was that I had the grass too close to the base path.
I've found, well, part of there's two things to this here, and that we haven't resurfaced the field since we opened, so the baselines have gone from 5 feet to now they're 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that because it's not so much a big issue on the third base side, but my first base side coming out of winter, you know, I have a lot of shade there, and
yeah,
we're so far north, I have a lot of shade there. So I feel like with how our turf and sand is here, I kind of like the guys running on dirt. I think if we have that firm, they actually run a little better on dirt. And I have turnouts at in foul territory that we put in. We'll have a picture of that as well. Just so you can kind of see that. And it's interesting, the turnout at third base when I changed that late in 2010. I found that there when a guy's rounding third base, there's a slight hesitation in his progress as he makes sure he hits the base properly, and then there's a reacceleration the first two or three strides after he hits third base. So after he hits the base, now I've got him on dirt rather than on grass, and if the dirt is provided we're not in a rain game, if it's the dirt's the way I want it, then he's able to accelerate better.
I think that's just really interesting that you think about it that way. I think a lot of folks forget that something that small, that change in acceleration can have a you know, when you get especially to the major league level, right? Maybe not down in Paul's little league level, but even then, depending on how the kids are playing the game and how the players are playing the game, it can have a big impact on how they're running, how the game is being played. And I just think it's fascinating, you know, to hear groundskeepers that are thinking about that and putting that into their practices.
We actually still see the exact same type of wear in the exact same places, even at the lowest of levels, which is kind of surprising. Now, you know, another thing that you've seen a lot of, not in Major League Baseball, but certainly at the college level and high school level, is the first and third baselines being slotted in, which, you know, I'm totally against it because I'm a traditionalist. But I did succumb to the dark side a couple years ago. On our smallest field, which is where our 7, 8, 9s, and 10-year-olds play, because my theory was, well, those little bodies really don't do that much damage. You know, they're not wearing metal cleats; they're wearing the little plastic cleats, which actually can provide a lot more damage because a lot more compaction occurs with those. But I thought, well, give it a test. It saves us on some maintenance on the first and third baselines. And we did it as a test. Well, I got so much pushback from both parents and coaches at the Little League. But we stood our ground, and now nobody says anything about it, that they're used to it. But it has saved us a tremendous amount of maintenance time on that small diamond. Now, once we get to the 11 and 12-year-olds, you're starting to talk about some – can have some pretty big kids. And I have, again, still wearing the – at that age, you're still wearing the molded cleats that do a lot of compaction. My thought was, I'm not going to go there, you know, because I just didn't think the grass would really hold up for that. So at the, from the 11-year-olds on up, we've kept ours at the standard, you know, the standard dirt baselines. But I can see the benefits that some of these college coaches do and high schools will do, because they don't play a lot of games on those fields, where they've gone to the grass baselines up first and third base. Have you seen any of that at the professional level, Larry, in the minors or anything?
You know, not that I know of. I'm sure it's possible in the low minors. I think if you construct it properly, you know, it can be effective, you know, especially on a warm season grass. But the problem I see on a smaller level, you've probably heard this too, Paul, is that, you know, somebody decides to do that and they don't necessarily build a, you know, take out the dirt mix, whether it's ag lime,
yeah,
or
exactly,
you know, proper to a proper depth to allow for a
proper growing medium, proper right. growing medium, right, right. Yeah, that would certainly be the case, and we did exactly that. We took out our base mix in ours and went in with a more of a topsoil, because we're native soil blend anyways.
Yeah.
And the only place where we really, you know, we obviously have to do a little bit more aerification and seeding in those areas, which we'll take care of, but we do have to do a little bit of sodding sometimes right at the lead off at third base, even though we've got the cutout. Cut out there. The kids still, that's their acceleration area. So it does create some issues there on that particular field. I want to convey another little story here. this is from back also in 1989, which was my first year as head groundskeeper for the Orioles. And I'd gotten tired of the wear in front of the mound and said, okay, you know, I looked at the rule book, and the rule book said suggested layout of the mound.
Yep.
Suggested was the key word in that diagram. And so I said, okay, good. I'm going to make an egg-shaped mound. I had, you know, the slope was correct and everything. I maintained the slope. I mean, I just made it more egg-shaped to go a little farther out to take care of some of that wear that occurred in front of the mound.
Okay.
So I don't remember who the team was that came into play, but it turns out the head of the umpires, of all the umpires in the American League, was at the game that night. And he grabs me down on the warning track at pregame. So he comes down to me and he starts ripping me about my mound. You can't have your mound like that. And I said to him, I said, have you read the rule book? Oh, my God. And you could just see his face turn red. I said, if you look in the rule book says suggested layout of the mound. And it also says that all grass lines are at the discretion of the groundskeeper.
You cheeky thing.
And I left it at that and walked away.
And oh, that's great.
Brave.
Wouldn't you know that next year they changed the wording in the top of the rule in the Major League Baseball rule book to recommended.
Oh, boy. Recommended. Not required, though.
it still didn't say required. They didn't go that far. But it was interesting because I said to him, I said, did you notice that at the top of the page it says suggested mound layout? he was pissed.
That's great.
But that was another great story when it comes to the cutouts of the fields. But, you know, you've seen so many things over the years now that of people getting creative, the home plate shaped home plates areas,
sure. Yeah,
you know, which can be a pretty huge size tarp. You know, the other thing that I played around with, Larry, and I don't know if you've ever had to deal with this, but, you know, the early years of Oriole Park, we really struggled to keep the grass between mound and home plate. We didn't have great pitching at that time, and there was a lot of walking back and forth and catchers talking to pitchers, and they were just killing us because, you know, We're on a sand-based field. We were still learning how to maintain it. You know, it got weak there, and there was a point where I actually talked to the manager and the coaches and the front office about putting the walkway in. We ended up not doing it, and actually I'm glad we didn't, because I know it is a bigger maintenance nightmare, because it's just more skin dairy they have to maintain. It's two edges that could, you know, create lips, and especially leading up to a pitcher, that's pretty dangerous. But there are some ballparks that have put it in, most notably, of course, Detroit. I think somebody else did it, too, at one time for a while.
Arizona still has it.
Do they still have it? Yeah. So there are a couple that still do, and it is neat to see. But you know, if you're thinking about doing that, remember that that's a pretty critical area, straight up that infield right to the pitcher. And those two lips, you've really got to be careful with that.
Well, and I think that's...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say that's a good point to lead into, you know, we need to wrap things up. So what do you both, I'll ask each of you this question. We'll start with you, Paul, and we'll let Larry have the last word. What do you guys think are the factors that you should consider most when you are creating your cutouts or deciding if you want to change your cutouts?
Well, for me, it's where is the wear occurring, and how do you, If it's constant wear that you can't seem, you know, you sod it or seed it and you just can't seem to keep up with it, and it just doesn't allow the turf to thrive, you've got to change something to make it work. And sometimes it's going to mean, for instance, like the third base, the turn at third base can sometimes drive people bonkers trying to keep the grass in the foul territory there. A decent place, and you go, well, God, if I cut this out, then I got to cut out the good grass over on the first base side. Sometimes you have to sacrifice some of the army to make sure that everything holds up. You know, and of course it's the player personnel as well are the two, really, to me, the two big things you got to look at. But you know, if it's affecting play, or if it's, you know, in some cases, such as the major league level, where you have to deal with the field's got to look pristine all the time, sometimes you have to make those moves and do things that you don't want to do and make a cutout where you have to, and you have to do it correspondingly on the other side of the field where the turf is good. It's just what you got to do.
Yeah.
Larry, what do you take into account? What do you think are the most important things to think about?
Well, I've got to figure, you know, aesthetics are a big issue. You know, in a case of somebody who's got, say, they've got a complex and they've got one feature field, they'll, you know, that might be a primary factor, is how it looks. And then maybe on the other fields, it's more about functionality and where the guys play.
Right.
So it's an interesting discussion, and you know, it's every age level and a little different in how they play and how they, you know, approach infield defense. I know at the professional level, probably from, you know, mid minor leagues on up to major leagues, bunting is becoming less and less of a factor. The analytics side of the game has found that bunting is not the best use of an out, which is kind of interesting. It goes back to what Earl Weaver used to think, just on, yeah, on his own instincts. Huh. So, yeah. So, I mean, bunting, we see fewer and fewer bunts. We're seeing fewer and fewer trips to the mound, thankfully, because they're trying to speed the game up. And, but at the college game, it's totally different. We have college tournaments, you know, the catcher's going to the mound twice an inning and they're bunting and infielders are playing in, and then, you know, that's a whole different animal. So, yeah, I think a lot of it just depends on what level of play you're at and what your comfort level is.
You know, at Oriole Park, when Cal was playing, we would start the season off with a back arc that was typically like 94 feet, sometimes less. And by the end of the season, we might be 95 and a half, 96 feet. We had to constantly edge because, you know, so our back arc vacillated considerably from start to end of the season, just because of Cal working that back edge. And eventually Harold Reynolds and all our other second basemen that played while I was there doing the same thing as Cal. You had no other way to deal with it. It was better to trim it back and turn into dirt than to put sod right in a critical place for a ball player there.
Yeah, and that's tough. We try not to sod that too much, but, you know, if we feel like we've got some inventory on our farm that's that's mature enough and dense enough, we'll go ahead and do it a couple times a year. My problem here is relocating sprinkler heads with my heating system is kind of a big deal. So
I've got to keep
that arc in within a kind of a 4-inch range without really. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Larry, we thank you for joining us today, talking about cutouts, the non-cookie style, and we'll hope to have you join us again soon.
I appreciate it. You know, and one other thing for the listeners I forgot to mention is that the home plate cutout is after a swinging strike three and the catcher does not catch the ball cleanly, if the hitter walks back to the dugout, he's not officially out or signaled out until he leaves the home plate circle. So that circle actually has a little bit of significance. But you didn't remember that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up in the rule book. Maybe I can get that changed.
Umpires will not lift their hand, strike three out, until the hitter walks to the grass.
Has left the circle. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, keep that in mind.
Very good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome.
Okay, so while we were chatting there with Larry, I was busily tapping away on my little laptop here in front of me, and pulled up the Major League Baseball rule. It's you know, part of the playing field rule number 2 in the rule book, and in section 2.1, the layout of the field, it reads: the grass lines and dimensions shown on the diagrams are those used in many fields, but they are not mandatory, and each club shall determine the size and shape of the grassed and bare areas of its playing field. So that's how the rule book reads. So, again, you have a lot of leeway there, with the exception of the mound, for the most part, as to how
not
you
anymore.
Want to set up
Thanks, that's Paul.
As to how you set up your grass lines. Well, you try to sneak one in and they nail you right away. So that about does it for our little chit chat on grass lines on a baseball field. They are the way they are, and how much freedom you have as a groundskeeper to change them any way you want. So if you want to do a drunken line and just do a squiggly all over, hey, you can do that, and then nobody can tell whether your lines are straight or not.
I was going to say, since you were focused on the Christmas cookie aspect of things, maybe we could do little snowmen cutouts or some snowflakes.
A leaping reindeer, maybe.
Leaping reindeer. I like that. Goodness.
That puts this newly shortened show in the books, and not because the FCC told us to.
Don't miss a minute of our next show, you guys. And please come visit us at beaconathletics.com/podcast, where you can find all of our previous shows, add a ton of useful links, fun pictures from our guests, and program information by the ton. And if you're a baseball junkie, don't forget to check out baseballtalkradio.com. They've got shows there for every team, and we're really glad to be a part of this network. They have some wonderful shows for you to try if you're looking to kind of pad out your podcast experience.
And we'd always love to hear from you, but more importantly, even more so now, as we've changed the format a little bit, more shortened format. Do you like the short format, or do you prefer the old long format, which puts you to sleep? Personally, I like to take naps, so I always loved the long one. You can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com, where you can send us your comments on the new format or about our show, questions or show ideas. All those things are good. If you do so, we would love that.
Especially since we're coming into football/soccer/ high school season. So, guys, give us some ideas.
I can't wait for football.
We're bringing Ross back. Yeah.
Our gridiron guru.
That's
coming
right.
Up in the next couple of shows.
And if by chance you're a Twitter follower, go ahead and check us out at Diamond Da Vinci's, at Diamond, DAVINCIS. We're not crazy active there, but we like to share some stuff and put some different info there as well.
And again, the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is brought to you by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions and solutions for sports field managers.
Yeah. If you're providing sports field managers, that'd be interesting. We grow them and we put them in the oven and we bake them just nice.
That's right. They puff right up. And with that, I bid you adieu till our next meeting.
Adios.